hold, and then we'll start with the music and then go from there. Well, it's great to be back, and we're back for another episode of My Life in Football. It seems like a very, very long time since we managed to do one of these shows, but I'm back for the time being anyway, all by myself, but we're doing My Life in Football, and I'm really happy to say that, of course, my guest is the chairman, Steve Gardner, from Romford, so welcome, Steve.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. We're getting there. We're slowly but surely we are getting there. But I suppose since we last spoke, I know we spoke personally and so forth, but since we last spoke and since I last saw you at the Canby Island game, there's been a lot of changes for Romford, and I dare say exciting times. But as I say, we'll go into those a bit later on. But I mean, Steve, how did you get involved in non-league football in the first place?
Well, I played football at a very, very low and very, very poor level for a number of years, certainly not non-league standard. And my brother was what was probably known as a groundhopper. He used to go to different games and used to tell me about all these clubs around the country that he'd been to that sort of I didn't really understand how the non-league system worked. And then in 1992, local policeman David Howie decided that Romford was too big a town not to have a football club, and he wanted to resurrect the club. So my brother asked if I wanted to go along to the meeting, along with my dad, who used to be a Romford supporter when West Ham weren't at home. And at first I wasn't going to go to the meeting, but he offered to drive, so I said to him I'd go along to the meeting, and as has been documented before, it was a really good meeting, very sort of powerful, with lots of people standing up and sort of getting very emotional about sort of games they'd seen in the 60s and players, and there was someone there who played in the 49 Amateur Cup final and got a rousing round of applause, and it was very stirring. And we got home and I sort of said to my brother, you know, what do you think? He said, well, I don't think they'll get it off the ground. He said, the trouble is, there's lots of people that enjoy these things and like them. He said, but are there enough people that have to put in the hard work and get it started? Do they even know what would be required to get it started? He said, I go to a lot of non-league games. He said, there's always people buzzing around and working hard and doing bits and pieces. And I think I saw that as a bit of a challenge. So I rang Dave Howie up the following morning and said, look, I was at the meeting yesterday, I've got no experience of running a football club, I've just finished playing football, I've got experience of committees and organisations, etc, etc, is that any help? He said, come along, I'm going to have a meeting at my house in a week's time and we're going to pick a committee, and it all sort of catapulted from there.
So the club's been going, what, since 1992?
Yeah, this is our 28th season.
Oh, All right, okay. See, for me, I assumed it was been going for a long, long time. I didn't realise it was only like a...
Yeah, the club folded in 1978, probably a precursor to a lot of clubs now, is that I think they spent a little bit beyond their means. Those were the days where you got elected into the Football League rather than went up sort of based on position. And when the Speedway finished... in 1978, sort of the club played their last season, played all the away games, played all their games away, which obviously affected revenue and support and what have you. They were going to build a new ground at Old Church Hospital, but I think by the time they'd paid all their debts off, there just wasn't enough to keep the club going. And in 1978, they shut their doors, and there was a sort of 14-year hiatus where Romford didn't have a senior football club.
So, I mean, you went round for the meeting. I mean, what progress from now? Take it all sort of, all the jigsaw pieces felt that fell in.
Yeah, we went round to Dave's house and sort of, you know, I think there were seven or eight of us there. There was a separate supporters committee set up as well. But sort of at the meeting, we sort of decided, you know, it was sort of like, what job do you want to do? I mean, none of us had any idea of running a football club. We were gloriously naive, I think it's fair to say. And Dave was sort of elected unanimously as chairman. Terry Felton was elected as vice chairman. And I said, oh, you know, I think I was public relations officer, which probably is your sort of job now, which is media. But this is in days before Twitter and mobile phones and what have you. So I was public relations officer and sort of responsible for sort of trying to get people interested in the media going. And I was, as I say, Terry Felton was, as he is now, was a real character then and really got involved. And sort of with no social media, we had to do things the old way. I remember before the club started, he rang me sort of early one morning and said, are you up? I said, yeah. He said, come to get you, I'm coming to get you. So he got around to my house at sort of like half past seven Saturday morning. He jumped in the car and I said, where are we going? He said, we're going to hang around outside the TV studios and see if we can get ourselves on St. Greasy. I said, doing what? He said, well, run for the back. They've got to know about it. They've got to know about it. I said, well, will it be of interest? He said, it will, the way I tell it. So we hung around for a couple of hours. May have been a television studio, may not have been, but didn't see anyone come in, come out. But Terry was undeterred. He would have gone back next week and the following week. Such was his passion for the club. And moving sort of up to date, Terry has actually written, along with Mr. Haley, they wrote five volumes of Romford all the way back from the very first day that it started all the way up to 1978. So if there's anyone interested in the books, then John Haley and Terry Felton's books are available in five whopping great big volumes.
Cyclopedias.
Yeah, I mean, when we first started, we had no idea. We contacted Hornchurch and managed to arrange a ground share. We, again, showing our naivety, we just applied to the Deodora League because that's the one we were told about and sort of said, can we come and join your league? And they sort of explained it doesn't quite work like that. You have to start at the bottom and work your way up. So we spoke to the people at the Essex Senior League who were very, very helpful and told us what we needed to do and what we had to do. And you know, it was a start from there. But even our first meeting, once we'd appointed our manager, you know, we sort of said to him, oh, we're new to this, we've never done this before, what normally happens? So the manager and the management team gave us a long list of things that clubs usually provide the manager with. And as we moved sort of through the years, we perhaps found out that washing his trousers for him every week probably wasn't something that every club did, and bringing him his lunch to the ground and what have you. But they were great times. We were swept along on a tide of sort of enthusiasm and hope. And as you touched on earlier, that's probably sort of turned full circle now, except that in those days, you obviously didn't have the ability to sort of contact everyone through sort of sitting in your armchair and whatever. You had to get out and about. But we, our manager, the Lyndon Lynch, our first manager, got a team on the pitch, playing in the old club colours, ground sharing at Hornchurch. And to be honestly truthful, for the first year or two, it didn't really matter where we finished. People were just so glad that we were able to get a team on the pitch. And we were able to use and borrow a lot of that history from the previous club to generate a lot of interest and generate a lot of support. I think the only sort of slight issue now is that we've got an ageing support, because over the years, because we've ground shared and we've moved about, we haven't really picked up a lot of support. You go to, you know, your Heybridge Swifts or your Aveleys or Maldens or any of these clubs, there's often sort of 8, 9, 10 youngsters behind the goal with a drum or a bugle, you know, making a lot of noise. And we haven't got that because we've traditionally sort of almost got the same support that we had in sort of the early sort of 70s and 1975, 1976. There's not many new people coming to watch Romford, but we've probably got 80 or 90 diehard fans that remember the 60s and the 70s.
So what was the first game?
Our first game was home to East Ham, and we won that 3-1. And two of the goal scorers, one was a guy called Ian Woodward, who used to play for Romford in 1978, so he actually was still around and actually came back. And one of the other goal scorers was a guy called Mark Brett, who coincidentally was a guy I sat next to at school.
So, I mean, the first year, though, I mean, how did it go? So, you know, did you get the plenty of support from the Essex Senior? Was it the Essex Senior League you started in?
Yeah, it was the Essex Senior League. I think that we finished round about 8th or 9th in the first season, which I think we considered to be very good. We had a budget, which is something that we had a budget of £400 a week. Which we thought was a king's ransom, but again, we were told that that's fairly reasonable. I don't know what that is in today's money, but certainly a lot more than Magic ever worked with. And, you know, as he always used to say, there was a bigger budget 20 years ago than there is now. But we were getting crowds of between 250 and 350 consistently throughout the season, which obviously in the Essex Senior League back ago, 20 years ago, was great. Supporters Club raised a lot of money. We were having a lot of events. We sold a lot of souvenirs and what have you. And, you know, we could only see the way as being up, you know, sort of the realism, shall I say, didn't sort of, you know, kick in for a couple of years when we realised that, you know, it is difficult, you know, getting good players. And it took us probably 2 years to perhaps understand the non-league scene, how it worked, how managers find players, what constitutes good players. Yeah, but I mean, we were right to start in the Essex Senior League. We couldn't have started out any higher.
So how long was that before you managed to make it into, what was it? Was it Deodora League when you first got in there, or was it?
Yeah, I think it probably was. Was it Deodora or Isis League or whatever they were? But yeah, what happened was we had our manager out for 2 or 3 years, and then we got a new management team, and we got McGovern and Marsden, who previously had been at Ford United and were very well respected managers in the Essex Senior League and in the league above, and we took them on because at the same time we also had a guy called John Goodwin came in who had plans to take the club places, so he was able to make a budget available, and we had some very good non-league players like Paul Evans, Danny Benstock, and then we saw a few sort of so-called stars coming to the club, and they certainly were stars for a club like Romford. Martin Hayes, who had been at Arsenal in their double winning side. As I say, Danny Benstock had been at Orient. We had Alan McKnight, the old West Ham and Celtic goalkeeper. And McGovern and Marsden were managers for about sort of 2 or 3 years. And we got to the last 16 of the Vars. And I think we won back-to-back promotions to probably what would be the equivalent of the Isthmian Premier League. And then John Goodwin moved on. He went to Bishop Stortford. It was very difficult to sort of get a ground built in Romford. There didn't seem to be many opportunities. And of course, he wanted to push on and sort of, you know, do well at a club. And Bishop Stortford were building their new ground, but sort of seemed to be a stumbling block regarding finances, so he decided to go to Bishop Stortford, took most of the squad with him, which we couldn't have afforded anyway. We were playing at Sungate at that time, which was in a bit of disrepair, so we managed to go back to Fulds and ground shared with Fulds United, and then Fulds United moved on and changed their name to Redbridge. So we found ourselves as the sole occupants of Fulds United's ground in Rush Green. So that was probably a couple of years where we almost experienced what it was like to have our own ground, if you like, albeit no sort of food and bar revenue, but we were the only team using the main pitch.
The one ground I remember when I was doing some youth, when I used to be the youth secretary at Waltham Abbey, and I remember taking a team up to play a Romford side in a county cup game or wherever else, and I remember going on to like an industrial estate, and there was like a stadium at the back, almost sort of.
Yeah, that would have been Sungate. Right. That was in between sort of, that's where Romford moved to when they merged with Collier Row. We merged with Collier Row for a year, and then unfortunately Collier Row went out of business because we dropped the Collier Row name, which obviously sort of upset a lot of people at Collier Row, but at the time John Goodwin was saying that was the way to go, that was the only way that we could go for the club to have survived. But Sungate was a ground that was sort of landlocked. It wasn't a particularly great ground, and it was very difficult to bring it up to speed, and I think I had Nick Robinson on speed dial for a couple of seasons because we, you know, the floodlights went out three times, and then we were asked not to play there anymore. And I think there was one season where we played home games at like nine different grounds because Sungate wasn't up to scratch. The owner didn't particularly want football there either. So sort of when John Goodwin left, you know, we moved back to Fulds United, which obviously was a much better facility and was in the heart of Romford.
I mean, any good stories you can tell us from the early days?
Well, I mean, going back to sort of the very early days, I remember we used to sort of print the programme ourselves and then try and staple it together, and then someone would run to the ground, and if they were selling well, they'd come back and we'd photocopy some more and staple them back. And we had two games where the floodlights failed, and we got someone in and they checked the floodlights, and the floodlights were all working, but we realised that it's when they put the urn on in the tea bar, it was used to put the floodlights over. We had a choice. You could either have a cup of tea or you could have the floodlights on. But I remember the pitch at Sungate was notoriously bad. It sloped, it was covered in mud, and I remember sort of we were playing Aldershot, who were in our division at the time, and they came down and they sort of walked in. It's sort of like, you know, where's the pitch? And we said, that's the pitch there. And they said, no, you can't be serious. What are we actually playing on? And we said, well, that's it. We play on it every week. You know, you're only playing on it once. But, it was good. I mean, but going back even further, I think going back to when we first joined the Essex Senior League days, all the officials in the Essex Senior League seemed to know the players and the players' names, and it was come here Paul or come here Danny, and you'd see the same referee and linesman sort of four or five times a season, and it was just a really nice vibe, oh, come on, you know, I'm not accepting that and what have you. And I remember one of the referees went up to one of our players and he's sort of, you know, put his hand up in front of his face in between the player and himself, and our player said, what are you doing? The referee said, I'm looking for the string. And he said, what string are you looking for? He said, well, every time I blow my whistle, your mouth opens. He said, there must be something there. But they were just, it was just nice. All the clubs were nice. You know, all the people had sort of one or two people that were, you know, people like Bowers and East Ham and Woodford, you know, they were all non-league people, just loved their clubs. You'd go to East Ham and they had sort of like a barrier. So you'd go up to the barrier and the guy would come out and he'd open the barrier, charge you for coming in and sell your programme. And then when you went in the bar, it was the same guy serving you behind the bar. And at half-time, he was the guy doing the hospitality as well. And some of these clubs were run sort of like on a shoestring, not just financially, but a shoestring of people as well. And they just loved their local club and loved their non-league.
I mean, you've moved from, as you say, from Sungate, and you went to, a bit more nomad type thing then after that?
Well, we was at Fulds United, and we got rumblings that Ford Motor Company were going to reduce their sport clubs in Essex by one, and that of the three that they've got, one in Basildon, one in Newbury Park and one in Rush Green, the Rush Green one was probably underutilised by Ford staff. Lots of people playing football there, underutilised by Ford staff. So we made a few representations to Ford Motor Company saying, look, if you're ever selling this, this would be sort of fit for purpose for us and tick all our boxes. Ignore the fact that we couldn't afford it and we haven't got any money, but it would tick all our boxes, but we'll try and find the money. But if ever you're selling it, will you let us know? And they said, yeah, yeah, if ever we sell it, we'll let you know. And each year we said, oh, has anything happened yet? No, no, nothing's happened, nothing's happened. And then we got a letter just basically saying that they'd been sold to West Ham United as their training ground and development ground, so we'd have to leave at the end of the season. So we had a ground share with Avely, who were at Millfield. They took us on and we was up there with Craig for a few years. And then we had a discussion, sort of obviously Avely were in our same division, were in the same division as us. And, you know, is the rent that we're paying strengthening their team and allowing them perhaps to come to us for players? So are we then financing the Avely team? And, you know, is that sort of perhaps something that we should try and avoid doing to try and create a bit more of a level playing field? So we then moved to Thurrock, who then managed to get two demotions in 2 years. And then obviously we're in our division as well, so we were back to the same situation. But loved the time that we had at Avely, and we loved the time at Thurrock. And of course the situation with Tommy deciding not to carry on with football at Thurrock meant that we had to move on. So we moved to East Thurrock, and we were there for a year. And non-footballing circumstances just meant that we had to move on with sort of things that were happening at East Thurrock. We hadn't fallen out of them, got on very well then, but they just weren't in a position to offer us a second year. So we've gone to Brentwood, which is where we are now. But obviously the Holy Grail is Westlands, and to get our own ground for several reasons. I mean, one of the reasons is obviously so that we're not moving around all the time, and once we're in the town, we can then start getting, you know, school kids and local groups to come over. You go to any of these places that have got the 3G pitches now, whether it's Avely or Sudbury, Harlow, whatever, they're all bringing in lots and lots of new supporters and lots of younger supporters because their facilities driving people towards their site. Whereas even though we're not that far away at Brentwood, it's very, very difficult at the moment even to get people to sort of travel out that distance.
So, I mean, I remember a few years back, I think it was before you went to East Thurrock, and there was I felt that I was going to see you on my doorstep. I thought you might have been there was a few little bits and bobs I saw on Facebook and Twitter from, I think, a friend of mine, Dave Hodges and stuff like that. But it was one of those things where all of a sudden I thought, hang on a minute, is there a chance that they may be, you know, Rob playing down at Waltham Abbey? Was that ever in the pipeline?
Well, I mean, I know Dave quite well, and I was sort of chatting to him, and he was sort of asking about what you're doing, where you're going. I sort of said, well, I'll use you as my backstop, Dave, if ever I get stuck, you know, perhaps that'll be somewhere that we end up with, because sort of some of the places that we were looking at were even further away. You know, we were offered some sort of ground shares that were a long, long way away, but John, who you probably know over at Waltham Abbey, he spent such a lot of money over there and a lot of money on the pitch. You know, sort of, it wasn't sort of a question that we sort of asked, because I just sort of, you know, felt that as they'd done all that work over there, that it probably wouldn't have been something that they were keen to do. For me, Brentwood would was the obvious choice for distance. It's the nearest ground to Romford, if you like, you know, or the second nearest ground, and sort of our sort of relationship with Hornchurch, and their relationship with sort of the league. It's very difficult to get a three-way share, and Hornchurch have already got the athletics club over there, and whilst they don't actually use the pitch for running on, they use the athletics track, but you've got the hammer throwing and you've got the discus and you've got the shot put on, what have you. And I mean, although we've sort of tried several times before, it's very difficult to get a three-way ground share sort of there. So really Brentwood was the nearest ground that we hadn't been to, if you like, and we spoke to them and they were able to accommodate us.
The other one I've seen rumbles about just recently as well, I think on the actual Romford page, it was a couple of people putting suggestions forward about giving Tommy a shout and seeing whether or not you could play at the old Thurrock ground.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether... I mean, I would presume that would be a no on the basis that sort of if Tommy had wanted sort of football on his doorstep, then obviously he would have kept Thurrock going. You know, I mean, all I know is sort of what I've read in the local press is it looks like that's due to be some sort of sporting village. I mean, I don't know when that's due to happen or, you know, if it's imminent or whatever. But no, I mean, it's certainly not something that I've spoken to Tommy about at all.
So, I mean, if we go back to the plan days, I mean, when did the Magic Man first appear at Romford?
Well, he appeared sort of without my involvement because he was running our reserve side. He first came to my attention when our manager then, Mark Reed, said to me, you know, look, I don't think I can take the side anymore. Same old story, you know, I'm having to rebuild all the time. I've got no budget. You know, I really don't think I can carry on. So he said, but I would ask one favour. He said, would you please have a look at the reserve team manager? He said, he's a great bloke. He said, he's a young guy, you know, very enthusiastic, knows his football. He said, I think you could do a lot worse than speak to him. So, you know, Colin and I had a chat with him and, you know, he impressed us and we gave him the job, you know, and as I say, I mean, apart from the circumstances that occurred sort of recently, you know, he'd been our manager for 11 years, I think it was, and, you know, had done a fantastic job, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree. And I think the more you know about non-league football, the more you know, the more you can appreciate the work that he did and how incredible it was to not only get us promoted from the Essex Senior League, which was never a target. It almost happened by mistake. It was, blimey, look, we're still top. You know, it wasn't where some teams sort of go for it, don't they? Say, right, okay, look, we're going to put some money into it. We're going to go for it. And we just had one of those teams that season that clicked. You know, we had good players. We played well. And we went up, and I think it was, look, if we're here for a year or if we're here for 2 years, well, so what, we'll enjoy it, you know, and we'd managed to stay, you know, every single year, but you could see that it was getting harder, you know, we'd done it on the last day of the season in the last minute, then last year you could argue we'd done it on a technicality, this year it's potentially just one going down or maybe none going down, but then next season it'll be three going down again. And all of the sides in the division seem to be stronger. The sides that come down seem to retain a lot of players and seem to be strong. Sides that come up aren't weak sides. You know, you used to be able to count on one of the sides coming up perhaps being a bit, you know, a bit naive or a bit poor, but that's not the case now. And I just think the division gets stronger and stronger. And you only have to look at how well teams like Bowes and Pitsy, Hornchurch, Canvey Island, you know, Grays Athletic, Morgan and Tiptree, Heybridge Swiss, you know, a lot of those clubs have taken on league clubs in FA competitions sort of over the last couple of years and have done well. And I just think that sort of step four standard of football is incredibly good and difficult to survive in, let alone get out of.
So, I mean, how did, I don't know if you even know, but do you know how the name Magic sort of came about? Because, I mean, it was one of those things, you know, in that period of time, since I've known Romford, he'd been the manager and whatever else, and it was always one of the clubs, and I'll be openly honest with you, Romford's one of those clubs, even now, you look at it and you think to yourself, it's a lovely club, you know, you've got some great people in there, you know, like yourself, you know, one of the top guys, you know, I said to the wife the other night, there's three people that I've got so much time for in non-league football, and you're top of that list, you know, and okay. You know, it's that type of thing where it's such a lovely club, really, really nicely, nice people that are involved in it as well. I mean, and it was always one of those results, if I was at Harlow, or I was at Averley, wherever it might have been, you was always looking at Romford And then some people would say, oh, we've got Romford this weekend, we've got 3 points this weekend. And I always remember that at Harlow. And you turn up at Harlow and it would be one of the hardest games you've ever played in the whole of the season. You know, whatever the result at the end of it was always a really tough game. But there must have been some, you know, I suppose first question, how did he, do you know how he got the name? And what was it like in that sort of situation where would you have rather people known you as being a bit of a, more of a nastier club, shall we say, and being at the top of the table, or would you have rather it be the way it was? Or is?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first meeting I had with him, we shook hands, he said, hello, I'm Magic, and I said, hello, I'm Steve, and I don't think I've ever asked him since then sort of what that relates to. I mean, whether that sort of goes back to his days when he played or whatever, but the name stuck, and obviously with what he's done at our club and how our club has operated, the name has become more apt through the seasons. But what you're saying about the club is we've always tried to, because we couldn't sort of pay the players, we've tried to do everything else the right way. You know, we try and be hospitable when people come to us. We try and be nice to the officials and make sure everyone has a good day out. But it's quite pertinent what you've just been saying, because we have noticed a slight shift in the balance over the last couple of weeks, because it's sort of, what should I say? In the past, if we've gone to games, I mean, I've even had a couple of occasions where in the boardroom afterwards or in the bar, a manager of the opposing team's come up to me and actually said, look, you know, don't tell my chairman because he'll go mad, but I'm glad you beat us today because we'd like you to stay up. You know, everyone likes Romford. Now, obviously, that's not the case, but a lot of teams, I think, liked us or felt sorry for us. We were plucky Romford, good old Romford, poor old Romford, or whatever. Now, over the last couple of weeks, the dynamics have changed, and sort of reading the social media and the Twitter feed, expectations have changed, not so much from our own supporters, but from everyone else. You know, sort of someone sent me or put something on social media the other day saying, you are now expected to win every game between now and the end of the season. If you don't do that, you've failed. And you think, that's quite a high expectation, really, isn't it? Because if we're bottom of the table, you know, we've got a new squad together. And I think we've probably gone from good old Romford and plucky old Romford to the team now that a lot of people want to beat. Now, whether that's because of a perception that we've got the budget, whether that's because Glenn's involved, whether that's because what happened to Magic, whether it's because the old players have gone, if it's a combination of all that, but it has sort of turned full circle. It would be wrong to say that the comments were damaging or anything. I mean, I haven't had any sort of like really sort of horrible sort of personal things. It's more aimed against sort of your results, if you like, you know, sort of, you know, I mean, I mean, when we lost the game against Coggeshall on that first game, you know, I mean, sort of Twitter went mad. I've never had so many people so gleeful that a Romford side has lost, whereas under normal circumstances you'd get, oh, plucky old Romford, keep your chins up, you know, don't worry, Coggeshall are a good side, or whatever it was, you know, yeah, glad you got beat. I mean, I think someone put it was a victory for football. You know, but it is what it is. I mean, we have to accept that. I mean, we're not the only club that's got, you know, an investor that has the ability to strengthen the squad when necessary. And we'll just have to get used to it. And I'm sure there's lots of teams, I don't know, I'm not comparing ourselves to them, but is that how Premier supporters feel about Manchester City? Is that how Bournemouth feels, that, you know, it's not a level playing field when you've got teams like Manchester City or Chelsea in it with their wealth? You know, I don't know. But, I mean, we're no different. I'm no different. Colin's no different. The ethos of the club is no different. And the supporters are no different. We've just got this opportunity to go on this journey. Billericay have already been on the journey, and I mean, you'd have to speak to Billericay supporters to see how they feel about it. But a lot of the ones that I've spoke to have said, you know, we're in a lot better position than we were. I can't predict the future, so I can't tell you what it'll be like in a month's time, 3 months' time, 6 months' time, or 2 years' time. But I'm pretty certain there wouldn't have been a Romford Football Club past this April or May
without some investment and some intervention, which is what we've got. So whatever happens now, as long as it takes us past April or May, then the club is in a better position than it would have been.
I mean, I've been part of your, you know, the Romford group on Facebook for some time now, for a couple of years or so. And it's very interesting to see, you see sort of like, I think I said to the wife the other week, I said, I think Steve's going to have to get his iron pants on now. Do you know what I mean? Because of the criticism that will come from all over the shot and all the rest of it. But when you actually look at the group chat from people like Derek and a few of the others that are on that page, the terminology they're using about the team, et cetera, hasn't changed at all. It's exactly the same as it was 6 months ago, 18 months ago, whatever else. I think the only sort of negative stuff, like you were just saying there, is coming from the outside. And I was very surprised, even with Magic going and all the rest of it, that there wasn't some kind of negativity in there. But it was nothing. It was all how you expect Romford to be, really nice, really good about everything else, you know, looking forward to what's going to happen, who's coming in next week, who's going to come in there, there was nothing in there that I saw that was actually negative in the chat. But, from outside, you were getting all that stuff, as you just said, people being a bit, what's wrong with it. And that must be difficult all of a sudden, as you've just said, to be that club that everybody likes and loves, now all of a sudden everybody, because they wish that they would have, say, somebody like Glenn coming in. And I know, don't get me wrong, I know Glenn's extrovert, is that the right word to say? I don't know, whatever else, but what he does, is there many people better at what he does social media-wise and that sort of publicity-wise than him?
Yeah, well, I think going back to the group, for people that don't know, it's an unofficial forum on Facebook. It's nothing to do with the club. It's not regulated by the club. It's not run by the club. But people that are administrators for it have told me that in recent sort of weeks, it's had 200 new members. So those 200 new members have got an interest in how this develops. Now, whether that's a positive interest or a negative interest, I don't know. But as you say, I mean, nobody who has been a supporter for the club for a long time has said it was the right time for Magic to go or the performances were poor. What they've said is, it's a shame, but we understand that this was part of a bigger picture. It was, if we wanted to, get Glenn on board, this is the way that Glenn operates and the way that Glenn wanted to operate. And we did want to get Glenn on board because it was important for the club. But as people have said, this is still our club. It's still our Romford. If they put our shirt on, then they are Romford players, whether they're doing it for nothing, £5 a week or £10 a week. But when sort of somebody, when we had the game against Cockleshaw and we had, it was all a bit crazy with Sky Sports there and people coming in and what have you. And I appreciate sort of the comments about, oh yeah, we let everyone in for nothing and, bought people a drink and what have you, that's fine. But as I said to someone, if I'd have won £30 million on the lottery the week before and I'd announced to the non-league paper and to all the press, I'm now going to stick £4,000 of my fortune into Romford Football Club. We wouldn't have got that attention. Absolutely. That wouldn't have been a story on Sky Sports. Glenn is the story. Glenn is the interest. It's not the club. It's the way that he holds himself. It's the things that he comes out with. It's people are interested in what he's doing and what he's saying. That's why he's got 30,000 Twitter followers. Perhaps celebrity is not the correct word, but he's somebody that attracts a lot of interest. And Sky Sports came down to see Romford play their first game, but it was all about sort of Glenn's involvement. One of the guys from one of the newspapers said, well, did you orchestrate it so that Ollie Mears was here as well? And I said, well, no, I'm not his agent. It just happened to be Coggeshall, and Ollie Mears just happened to come along to that game. He doesn't go to every single game, but we could have been playing, we could have been playing any team from our division. It happened when it happened, and nothing like that was orchestrated. But obviously, once we sort of, we didn't even go out and sort of say to Sky
and all the newspapers, oh, will you come down, will you give us some publicity? As soon as they found out that Glenn was embarking on another venture, that's when they got excited and their interest was piqued, and that's what's caused it. But the upside, which perhaps people aren't able to see, is we're hoping our crowds will go up as well. But we're getting sponsors contact us now saying, how can we get involved in the club next year? We've got people ringing up saying, oh, yeah, we want to come down and do this. We want to come down and do this. Now, they may well want paying for it or want some sort of remuneration, but in the past, we haven't had any interest in that. And all clubs will tell you that. We're all advertising for volunteers online. Can anyone come down and help? Can anyone come down and do that? And all of a sudden, this guy's come on the scene. He started to assemble a side together. And everyone wants a piece of him and consequently Romford Football Club. And we're not the only club in the country that's got a larger-than-life character involved in it.
So, I suppose, on the Glenn situation, how did that all come about? I mean, you know, because I was taken aback by it, I must admit, because I know when Glenn sort of left Billericay, I thought that's possibly maybe the last we've seen him for some time, you know, especially at our level of football. And then someone said something to me, have you seen that Glenn's now at Romford? I'm thinking, nah, they're winding me up. Do you know what I mean? Not because I wasn't expecting it, but he just wasn't expected generally. And then went on to Twitter, saw he was there. I mean, no disrespect for somebody like yourself, that must have been a massive coup, because I know, you know, how much passion you put into Romford, the rest of the board put into it as well, and you needed that funding to get to where you, the end game of where you want to be with your own stadium in the town.
Yeah, well, we tried to get Glenn on board before he went to Billericay, but our project wasn't far enough down the line, and sort of Glenn, as he is, sort of wanted something that he could work on straight away, and I don't think he wanted to sit around for sort of 6 or 9 months waiting for planning permission to come through, so we weren't able to do it then. But I've kept in contact with Glenn through sort of text and WhatsApp and, you know, over sort of, you know, his time at Billericay and what have you, and we just made contact with each other sort of a few weeks ago, sort of, and he said, I'm looking to get back into football again. He said, I know I'm going to get lots of offers, but would you be interested in talking to me? So Colin and I went and had a meeting with him. While we were there, I think another 7 clubs contacted him, and we sort of said, you know, yeah, we want to do it. He said, you know, this is how I would want to do it. This is what I would need to happen, and these are my plans, or rather, what are your plans? And we said, yeah. He said, well, I'm very ambitious. I still have got the desire to do, you know, if you like, I think he sees Billericay perhaps as a job that didn't get finished, and you know, he makes no secret he'd like to take a club from the non-league into the league. Now, no one's saying it's easy. We're not being sort of, you know, we're not saying, you know, it'll be in this time or that time. But I think he sees the potential that if he can get Romford playing in the borough in a new stadium and we get the community involved, then there's an opportunity for the club to grow in numbers. Romford's a big catchment area. It has a good history, and there is potential there, shall we say, you know, and I think we all believe that we can tap into that potential. Glenn's got a unique set of skills. I don't have those skills or contacts. I have different skills, and Colin has different skills again, and the idea is we're hoping it will be a blend. Yeah, that's what we're hoping. As I say, I can't see into the future, so I don't know what's going to happen. Plenty of people have sort of told us on social media, sort of almost month by month, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. But realistically, nobody knows until it happens. But we've just got to try and enjoy the moment. It's a complete change. You know, we're seeing players that have played against us before, or players that have got experience at sort of, you know, Conference South level and what have you, and we haven't had that, you know, for a long time at Romford. So we're just at the moment, you know, sort of hopefully the supporters are going to enjoy some football where we're able to compete and get off the table. That's my first aim. You know, I know Glenn's sort of got his own sort of, you know, where we want to be, but for me, let's just get off the bottom of the table.
So I look at it in a way that some of the comments I see are, you never know who's going to turn up next week. You never know who's going to bring in. Who's he going to bring in this week? Who's he going to bring in that week? How can you get a settled team? This isn't happening. That's happening. Who's coming in? But then I look at it from another point of view and think to myself, nothing's changed at Romford, because when Magic was there, and I can only go back as far as Magic, in my personal opinion, is, and I remember speaking to you about it and Magic about it on numerous occasions, you would have certain players playing for you on Saturday. You might get a 7-day put in for him on the Sunday because all of a sudden that player's had a good game, scored that trick or whatever else, and you lose him for the next week because you're not paying the guy any money. So all that's changed, in my opinion, is the fact that now, if you might have a different side one Saturday to the next Saturday or a few that's changed, you can afford to go out and get a player. So there's no real change in the philosophy, really, I suppose, in a way, because when you weren't paying them, you couldn't necessarily hold on to them the following week. And then all Glenn's now probably doing in conjunction with yourselves is bringing in players to try and improve the team. So there's not much of a difference, really, is there?
No, well, I suppose the main difference to that would be the players that are leaving are because the manager wants them to leave. Whereas in the past, we would, it's like with Timmy earlier on in the season. I think Timmy scored 4 goals in 6 games. And on that forum that you were mentioning earlier, someone put on there, did everyone say goodbye to Timmy today? And someone said, well, is he leaving? And they said, well, he's bound to, isn't he? He scored 4 goals. He's had his 6 games. That's about the most that we can get out of him. And lo and behold, sort of 7-day came in next day and he'd gone on the Monday. You know, whereas now that's not going to happen. We're not going to have people coming in and taking players off of us for £10, £20, £30 because we've got, you know, players that are on more than £30 and what have you, you know. So that's not going to happen. And again, the other thing that Glenn's got from his time at Billericay, he's built up an incredible contact list of league clubs and what have you. So we're getting players coming in on loan to us that we wouldn't get at other clubs, and we're not having to foot the wages because in some respects, some of the clubs just want these players to have game time. Others want a small contribution towards their money and what have you. So it's just a case of, it's just a case of seeing where it takes us. But all managers want to change the squad. I think the thing with Glenn that I think is difficult, if you read some of the things that he does on social media, then it's really, really difficult for him sometimes, I think, to win. Like recently he had a pre-planned holiday before he took Romford over. Now, I guess most managers wouldn't have said anything, just gone on the holiday, left the rest of the management team to cope with it and deal with it when you come back. But because he had a similar situation before and everyone sort of, you know, tore into him on social media, he came out and was honest and said, look, you know, I'm only going to be at the game for half a game on the Saturday because I'm going on holiday, I've got a flight to catch. And of course, that was wrong. Was, oh, well, you know, do you think Jurgen Klopp would do that? And do you think, you know, this one would do that? And you think, well, no, but the circumstances are slightly different, aren't they? Jurgen Klopp would probably be able to cancel his family holiday or whatever, or, you know, the club would pay for him to have another holiday. You know, this is not somebody that's paying being paid to do a job. This is someone that's paying to do a job. So I do think sometimes it's difficult for him to be seen by others in a good light when actually sort of he hasn't really done anything that's perhaps that much different. When players go on holiday during the season, don't they? All happens, you know. And, you know, players say, oh, I'm catching a flight to Marbella or whatever, I'm off for a few days. And, you know, generally speaking, they don't get particularly bad press in on social media, which they shouldn't do.
I suppose the difficult question, I suppose, for you. I mean, I know how close you were with Paul. And so forth. How difficult was that conversation when you had to have that conversation with him? Was that probably one of the hardest conversations?
It was incredibly difficult. It was very, very difficult for me to do. I knew why we were doing it. I knew the reasons. I mean, obviously, I won't go into all the details, but it was made even more difficult by how understanding Magic was, if you like. I think sort of, you know, I thought, you know, okay, well, if you know, if I've got to hold the phone away from me here for 10-15 minutes while, you know, I'm being sort of, you know, called whatever, then that's perhaps, you know, perhaps that's fine. But he was as dignified as as he was as a manager and what have you. You know, obviously bitterly disappointed, but you know he acted professionally throughout. And I think even now, sort of after 6 or 7 weeks, you won't find anything on social media or anything where he sort of badmouthed the club or whatever. He's just expressed his disappointment, and I think that's the measure of the guy, to be honest with you, Phil.
I mean, one of the big surprises for me is that with the jobs that have come up as well in that time, that he's still not there. He's still not back looking at another Isthmian team or, you know, and managing them. That's one of my big surprises, I'll be honest.
I mean, I don't know. Perhaps if you've been a manager for 11, 12 years of one club and then you wake up one morning and find you're not manager of that club, do you perhaps have a bit of a break for a month or two? I can't believe he's not getting offers. I can't believe that at all. And I'm pretty sure we'll see him back somewhere. But I don't know, maybe he wants to have a rest or a break or whatever. But I would be very, very surprised if he wasn't getting offers from clubs.
I suppose, to finish with then, I suppose, as we sit here now, is it the last few weeks been a little bit like Christmas? You know, you sort of like one players that you probably thought you'd never ever see play for Romford, playing for Romford, and if Glenn comes up to you and says, "Look, I'm looking to sign this bloke, can you get him signed up?" And you're going, "Oh my God, this is incredible." Do you know what I mean? Is it that type of feeling?
Yeah, I mean, some of the names that have been bandied about and some of the players that we've signed, it's almost like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you're playing for us now." You know, but it's also been very, very hectic. You know, we've got a completely new squad, so we've got to get to know them. They've got to get to know each other. We've had quite a few games off because of the bad weather and what have you. So I wouldn't say so much like Christmas, but it's the perhaps the lead up to Christmas, where you know that, you know, it's a long way away, but you know something exciting is going to happen at the end. And so this journey isn't about me and it's not about Colin. The end game is to get a ground in Romford for Romford. What my involvement is, what Colin's involvement is, that's not important. That doesn't matter to us. What we want to do, what I really want to do, I suppose, is drive past there at some point with my grandkids in the car or whatever and say, you know, Grandad had a hand in that happening. You know, that's what I really want. And to have something that's there sort of forever, if you like. So, you know, maybe my grandkids could play for Romford one day, or they could play in the stadium, or their kids could play there. But to have something that's there. So that's what it's always been about for us. It's getting something that, you know, going all the way back to, as David Howie said in 1992, Romford is too big a town not to have its own football team. Well, Romford is too big a town not to have its own football team in its own ground in Romford.
So, I mean, I should be really close, but how close is that now? Is that a lot closer now since Glenn's been involved, or how long
have you been now? It's a lot closer now. I mean, obviously the focus at the moment is still on the team, getting that sorted and getting that, and then we've still got to, I mean, even with Glenn involved, you know, still sort of hoops to jump through with the council. I've got to rewrite the business plan because that's changed slightly, but you know, we've still got the planning permission. We've got some work to do, but obviously with, I mean, Glenn's not only got the sort of the financial backing, but obviously he's got the expertise because he's been through something like this before, sort of with Billericay, with building projects and dealing with councils, and obviously through his business. So we're going to sort of lean heavily on his knowledge and what have you. But at the moment, the main thing is just to get the team sorted, get a settled squad out on the pitch, and take it from there.
Do you know roughly what when this, you know, when it all sort of fits in and you'll be playing in this new ground? I mean, if everything stays the same as it is now, and you get all the, you know, cross the I, so yeah, cross the T's and dot the I's. I mean,
I'd like to be in it in the next sort of 2 years, ideally two seasons, I should say, after this season. You know, so perhaps one, maybe two seasons more ground sharing, and then be in it.
Exciting time.
But in the whole scheme, I know that people might say, "Oh, that's another 2.5 years." But in the whole scheme of things, you know, considering it's been 28 years to get to where we are, the potential for sort of pushing that on and getting that ground built in a time scale like that is doable.
3G?
Yeah, sorry, Keith.
He'll love you for that.
He's just turned off now, hasn't he?
Well, that'd be good fun. But no, I'm really looking forward to it. Listen, mate, and as I said to you, I've been involved in non-league football now for probably about 10 years. There is not one club, there is not one person that deserves it more than you. So congratulations for everything that's going on in Longford, and hopefully it carries on going for the better and we see you getting off that bottom place and, who knows, getting into that playoffs even this year and getting up next year, because it'll be fantastic, because I mean, there won't be many more people pleased for you than me, mate, if that does happen, because you've been an absolute star for Longford, and you wish everybody there, yourself and all the rest of the committee, Glenn, all the very, very best for the rest of the season and what's coming up.
Thank you very much.
No worries. Well, that's the end of my life in football with Steve, and probably one of my favourites, if not my favourite interview I've done on My Life in Football. But we'll be back with more of the D&K show coming up in the new year. More of these interviews as well lined up. We've got Lee Judges from Arsenal Fan TV as well, talking about his time in non-league football and football as well. So with what's possibly going on today over the corner, out the corner of my eye, might have a lot of stuff to talk about as well. But we'll find out. But until then, a massive thank you to Steve, and a massive thank you for everybody at home for watching. And thank you once again for your support.